This is Patsy with a Z. And I just remembered to take off my mask. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book, coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. At the bottom of the hour, I am so excited that I'm going to have a call from England, and Charles Cornell is going to be with me, and we are going to be talking about this wonderful book. It's an anthology, and his story in the anthology is incredible, and the name of the book is The Light Fantastic, and it's really a lot of fun, and I'm looking forward to talking to him at the bottom of the hour. But right now I get to turn to an author who hasn't been on the program before, but she comes from Rick Riordan, so I know that she's great. It's so wonderful to welcome you to the program, Yunha Lee. Hi.
Hello, pleased to be here.
Okay, did I pronounce it correctly?
Yes, you did.
Okay, well, it's wonderful. I love Rick. He's just so wonderful. What he has done for authors, I think, is so incredible. Really reaching out to all of you from different and diverse backgrounds to come out with these wonderful books that take mythology and brings it to life.
Yes, absolutely. I was so excited when I heard that he was doing this program, not just as a writer, but as the parent of a biracial daughter. And the idea that she would have access to diverse books that maybe weren't as available 20 years ago when I was reading, that was incredibly exciting.
Well, they weren't. 20 years ago, there wasn't that much diversity. But, of course, the new book is called Tiger Honor, and it follows after your big hit. I mean, it was a really big hit, Dragon Pearl. So this must be really exciting for you.
Yes, I'm feeling very honored to have the chance to follow it up with a second book. I originally intended Dragon Pearl as a standalone, but when I finished it, I knew that I had more stories to tell in this universe, and Disney Hyperion gave me that chance.
Well, I think I agree. I saw potential, too, and, of course, Rick did, and they are wonderful. I am just so thrilled always when I get one of their books because I know it's going to be something. Now, you know, middle grade is such an important time for children to be reading, to encourage children to read. And so this really opens up a whole new world for them, doesn't it?
Yes. One of the things that I had to adjust to, I started out in adult science fiction, where things can be a little more complicated, a little more obscure. And one of the learning curve bits for me was learning to write with more clarity so that I could tell a deep and interesting story with characters who go on a deep and interesting journey, but be accessible to readers who maybe may not be the most confident in their reading skills, or maybe, you know, reading is not their favorite thing yet, and that's something that they are still discovering.
Well, that's one of the things that is always a challenge. People will, you know, people who have not started writing and they think about writing this, they sometimes think, well, I will start with a children's book, and then I will work my way up to a middle grade, you know, a chapter book, a middle grade book, and they don't understand that writing for kids is really a challenge because you have to engage them quickly. You know, adults will be more forgiving. They'll read like 20 pages of a book and say, you know, and they'll keep sort of slogging away until perhaps it hits. But kids, they're pretty, you know, picky about it.
Yes, and the other thing that a friend of mine who is a chess coach has to remind me is that kids aren't stupid. They know less about the world because they've lived for a shorter period of time, but they're pretty smart, so you can't talk down to them. You have to write in a way that respects a child's intelligence.
Exactly. Yeah, oh, they get on to you very quickly if you're writing down to them. They understand that, and they like a challenge. I've discovered, you know, when I was teaching in those days when I used to go and teach Sunday school, you know, and interact with kids, they really appreciated good writing. And when they got engaged with a series, I mean, they became engaged.
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely.
So tell us about the new book. As we said, it follows on. Now, the first book was a great hit. Now, with Tiger Honor, explain the situation. Set it up for my listeners.
Tiger Honor is a space opera with some influences from Korean mythology. And its main character is a non-binary tiger spirit named Sebin. That means that he has they have a tiger shape, but they can also appear as a human. And what Sebin has dreamed of all their life is to become a starship captain in the space forces like their uncle Juan. So the day that Sebin gets an invitation to serve as a cadet in the space forces should be the happiest day of their life. Unfortunately, that same day, the family receives a letter that says that Captain Juan has been declared a traitor and is a fugitive from the law. So not only does Sebin have to navigate this new job as a military cadet, they have to figure out what went wrong with their uncle, someone they've trusted all their life, but who seems to have a sinister past that they never knew about.
And, you know, it's always wonderful. I love science fiction. I've always loved science fiction, and I think it's so great. It's a great way to draw kids into a storyline.
I remember when I was 6 years old and my parents showed me Star Wars, and I became obsessed with it. So I think that's very true. A lot of kids, whether they're interested in Star Wars or they're stargazers and interested in living on other planets or, you know, excited about astronauts, science fiction really has an expansive view of the world, that there's so much more out there in the universe that we can all explore together. And that was sort of what I wanted to get at when I decided to write this as science fiction.
So when of course, all of this is using and mixing in Korean mythology, how much of it were you raised on the mythology, or did you have to do research? How did that come into your life?
It was some of column A, some of column B. I'm Korean-American, but I did spend half my childhood in South Korea, and my parents would tell me Korean folk tales about fox spirits seducing and waylaying travelers, tiger spirits disguising themselves as your grandmother and trying to eat children. There's a lot of predation in Korean mythology all over the world, I'm sure. And so I did have those stories in my background, but I also had to do a lot of research. And my mom was a lifesaver here. I would email her and say, "Hey, Mom, I'm working on a book, and I need to know more about Korean fox spirits." And she would go to the library and take pictures of the books and send me information. So it's really thanks to Mom that I was able to do this.
That's wonderful. Well, she must have been really thrilled when you started this series and knowing that you're going to, you know, really make people aware of, you know, generally speaking, you know, up until 20 years ago, it was mostly everybody knew about leprechauns. But there's so much more. And so it's wonderful. She must have been really thrilled when you told her about it.
Yes, my mom generally thinks that everybody needs to know about Korean culture, and especially Korean food. The food in their food.
Well, it's very popular in my family too. So this is fantastic. When you've introduced some sign language in here into this book, to explain that.
So one of the things that I became aware of through talking to a friend who is a disability advocate is that disability doesn't disappear just because we live in the present or in the future. And I said to myself, well, why wouldn't there be a deaf culture in a science fiction future? And if you think about it, in space, like, you know, it's a vacuum. You can't talk in space. Sign language would be more important than ever. So I just wanted to introduce that as an element in the book.
Well, I thought it was very clever, and knowing several people who communicate, you know, in their families with sign language, I was impressed with that element of it.
I'm really glad that came through. Talking to my friend has really opened my eyes to a lot of things that I take for granted as someone who is able-bodied, and it's like that's not the only experience there is in the world.
Exactly, and I think more and more with modern literature, we are seeing this, and whether it's people who are, you know, confined to a wheelchair or use sign language, that it's so important that children understand it, and at a young age, as you know, the middle grade period is a time for them to start accepting and understanding people with different abilities.
Yes, that's absolutely true.
Now, when you became a New York Times bestselling author, what was that like for you when you realized the first time?
I may have made high-pitched dolphin noises when my editor told me, because I had, you know, I had no idea that Dragon Pearl would reach that level of success, and I'm incredibly grateful to everyone at Disney Hyperion and my editor, Steph Lurie, and to Rick Riordan, and to all the readers for making this possible.
Well, he has a great talent for finding talent. He's got a good eye, and I think he recognizes an author when he reads an author's work. He can sort of really get into it and understand that they're going to do something fantastic. And I'm always impressed with everyone that he sends to me, because you are all so talented.
I have to say that working with Rick has been one of the highlights of this whole experience. I felt incredibly honored. My daughter sort of screamed when she heard I was writing a book for Rick Riordan Presents, because she had grown up on the Percy Jackson books and the Magnus Chase books. So she was incredibly excited.
Well, I think one of the greatest things before this COVID pandemic, before this happened, and he was doing events. When he goes to an event with children, they treat him like a rock star. It's so magnificent to see children get so excited about a writer.
It really is. I did one event with him a couple years ago, and the enthusiasm was just incredible to see.
Oh, it is. I just love it. And it's a shame that, you know, you can't do it right now. How are you working through this era now of you're doing a lot of Zoom presentations? Do you talk to school groups through Zoom? How do you reach out and do the marketing now?
It really is through Zoom or Crowdcast or, you know, any of those online platforms. And you know, it has its ups and downs. It's not the same as being there in person and being able to talk to readers. But on the other hand, it does make events available to people who aren't in the geographical area. Like if you're in New Jersey, you can sign up for a book event in San Jose and have access to things that you might otherwise not have. So there are ups and downs, I think.
And we hope that it will pass soon so that we can get back to events, because although it's Zoom is great and people, you know, out of the areas can, you know, see their favorite authors, there is nothing like actually meeting your favorite author. And I know so many people who, because of going to an event where they met the author, were inspired to start writing, you know, whether it was going to and actually meeting, you know, Mary Higgins Clark and being inspired by just her enthusiasm and her joy of writing and her always, whenever she'd come on the program, she'd say, all you have to do is sit down and stick to it. So what's your philosophy? How, you know, what's your how do you write? First of all, people are asking me a lot. Now with something complicated like this, and there are a lot of things happening. Do you use Word or do you use Scrivener? What do you use technically to help you write?
I use Scrivener to write. I find it easy to work with, and also this is embarrassing to admit, but Microsoft Word and I are not friends. We'll struggle with the program. So Scrivener helps me do what I do in a way that is streamlined and easy to use. I actually do sometimes write on paper, like I'll take notes on paper or on my iPad, because it sort of helps me jolt myself out of a rut if I change how I write.
Well, I love Scrivener. I think it's fantastic, especially when you have, you know, a lot of different characters and you want to keep track of everybody. I think it's a fantastic program.
Yes, absolutely. Having discovered it, I don't know how I got to writing without it.
Yeah, I know the feeling. I know the feeling exactly. And I still, you're right about Word. I'm not really great on all those different things they have at the top of the page. So I'm pretty basic. But in Scrivener, I can manage everything. Well, you know, my listeners, so many of them, you know, went through NaNoWriMo this, you know, past year in November. It's 2022. Can you believe it?
Wow.
But I had quite a few of my listeners who did NaNoWriMo for the first time in their lives. They actually sat down and wrote. When did you start writing, and how did this happen to you, this writing bug?
I actually started writing in third grade because my third grade teacher was a man named Mr. McCracken, and once a week he would dress up in what I now recognize was probably a Superman costume, only he called himself Story Man, and he was so adamant that everyone can learn creative writing and everyone has a story in them. And I said to myself, I want to be a writer too. Nobody had told me about self-employment tax. I just knew that I had this dream and that I was going to pursue it. So I started writing stories and inflicting them on my kid sister, who was sort of my captive audience for years. And she still beta reads for me. So she's always been there as my support.
Well, you are very lucky to have a third grade teacher who did that for you, because it is so important. And this is one of the things that I feel sad that kids really aren't interacting with their teachers as they used to. But to have a third grade teacher who dressed up as Story Man and inspired you and encouraged you, I think is just beautiful, because I had just the opposite. I had a third grade teacher. I'm left-handed, and she made me sit on my left hand. And
oh no!
Yes, really, third grade, and it was really quite terrible. And it took me quite a few weeks into the semester. Finally, my father said, "You know, why are you looking so sad?" Because he knew I loved school. He knew I could read. He knew, and I explained to him, you know, she's making me sit on my left hand. Well, the next morning, my father walked me to school, and let's just say I never had to sit on my left hand again. But she put me off of school and teaching for a long time because of that.
Yeah, I can imagine.
So to have that, and to remember your teacher and to be able to say, you know, he inspired me. I want, you know, I have a lot of listeners who are teachers too. Remember this story, that it is important that you inspire your students, and because look what they can become, a New York Times bestselling author. It's still exciting. Every time I say that, you know, I'm coming up to my 7th anniversary, and I never expected, when I started the program, never expected to talk to any writers. And now I have spoken to forget the exact number, but something like 300 New York Times bestselling authors. And that's still such an exciting term, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely.
Absolutely. Well, I think you've done a great, great job with this book. Do you want to tell people where they can contact you, your Facebook and all of that, and you have a website?
Yes, my website is at yoonhawlee.com. That's Y-O-O, excuse me, Y-O-O-N. halee.com, and you can find all my social media on there.
Okay. Well, everybody, really, this is a great book. So if you have any young people in your life, get this, and you will learn along with them, because they will be talking about Korean mythology, which you probably don't know about, but it's interesting, it's fascinating. And just like we have a Little Red Riding Hood with the wolf eating, you know, you have the same sort of, the mythologies blend around the, you know, the world. And it's fun to learn about new and different mythologies.
Yes, I've always loved the way that Korea has a version of the Cinderella myth, which you wouldn't think, but if you look it up, it's there.
Okay, well, Yoonha Lee, it's been wonderful talking to you, and I'm so happy, and I know this is also going to be a great hit, and again, special thanks to Rick Riordan. He is a wonderful person, and he's found another treasure in you.
Thank you so much for having me, and thank you for everything.
Okay, and Happy New Year, okay? Bye-bye now.
You too.
Bye.
Bye.
Okay, wow, this is interesting, isn't it? Korean mythology. Now, let's go. We're going to go to a book buzz. The first one of Devon Miller's for the year. My goodness, it's number 13 in the list. That's fantastic. Let's go to that, and then we'll have commercials. I'll be back.
Hey, everyone, it's Devon Miller, author and illustrator of the Mr. Tickety-Tock Lock children's book series, reporting for Joy on Paper with the latest on children's book buzz. 2022 is here, and that means it's time to ring in a new and different year. Now, hopefully you're not too sad that it's time for a new year, but hopefully this different year can bring in its own unique surprises. But different can be good, just like ZZ the Zebra learned in the book ZZ the Zebra. Told in rhyme, ZZ the Zebra was written by Karen Winward, who has a passion for reading and writing, and the illustrations were done by Kate Dobney. ZZ the Zebra is a tale about kindness. Now, we're more familiar with zebras being striped black and white, but ZZ isn't. She looks different to the other zebras. And being different is okay, because that's what makes us special. This book helps children understand the theme of uniqueness and kindness. Just like the characters in the story, let's all show a little kindness in the new year and wherever we go. This is Devon Miller reporting for Joy on Paper. For more book buzz involving children's books and authors, head on over to radio-joyonpaper.com and click on Devon Miller's Book Buzzes. I think it's about time that I buzz out now.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you ready to eliminate your home energy bill? Well, get ready to harness the sun. Go EHS, Effective Solar Solutions, by Efficient Home Services. With no upfront costs, you can save money on your utility bill and even eliminate your electric bill altogether with EHS Solar. Call EHS, the number one solar installer nationwide. We know how to customize your home. EHS handles every project in-house with no subcontractors. Remember, no upfront costs, tax breaks, and the best company in the business, Efficient Home Services. Schedule an appointment today at 727-353-3757. Visit our website and download your free buyer's guide to going solar at www.goehs.com. Go solar, go savings, go EHS. Call 727-353-3757 today to talk to our experts.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida, can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more rewarding careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to Toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z, and I am just waiting for a call from London, and I think London, or England, somewhere in England, from Charles Cornell. So I'm hoping that he'll get through. I don't know, you know. It's always, these things happen on live radio. So, you know, Big Ed already knows that whenever I need a backup, all I have to do is play Boxcar. So if Charles doesn't show up pretty soon, I'm going to be playing Boxcar. It's interesting. Lately, people have been talking a lot about their playlists. And I have a playlist, and people have been asking me about it because when Haley Woolbright first came on the program, I was so thrilled. And so I always have Boxcar ready. But I don't need it right now because I have Charles Cornell. Hi, Charles.
Hi. Hello. Hello.
How are you?
Good morning. I'm great. Thank you very much.
And you're all the way in England somewhere. Where in England?
I'm in a little village in North Lincolnshire. It's called Epworth.
Oh.
It's famous for being the home of John Wesley, of the Methodist Church. He founded the Methodist Church in the village in the 1700s.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Well.
So it's, it's in the middle of England, North Lincolnshire.
Oh, I know where it is.
Sheffield.
I moved to England when I was 21 years old, and I bought a cottage there.
Oh, right. Where?
Yeah, in Sonning, near Henley. I bought a four. Okay. I was 21 years old, and I had $25,000. And I moved from northern Michigan, and I arrived there, and I didn't know what the heck I was doing. It was a very funny story. All I knew is I wanted to live near where Jane Austen was born. That was my goal from the time I was 11 years old. I saved my money until I had $25,000. In those days, that was a lot of money. And I bought a house. I bought a house in this cottage. And I lived there for a long time, and I, of course, it was near near where Jane was born, and I used to go and picnic on the grass where she used to walk. So,
oh, right.
So no, I know England very well.
Is that near Henley?
Huh?
Is that
near Henley, yeah.
I was born in Henley.
Huh?
I was born there.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So this is amazing. So you lived here for a long time. You were here in the studio. I know you were here.
That's right.
And now you're back in England. But you don't have a very British accent. You lost that somewhere.
Well, I grew up in Canada.
Yeah, Canadian. Oh, well, that's not the same as a proper British accent.
But I was born in Britain. All my family are here. My wife is English. Her family are here. And so we decided we would come and make this our permanent home. But we do miss the weather.
Yes,
Florida.
It is glorious today. It's one. I'm not gonna tease you because you know what it's like.
Right.
The sun is shining. It's so beautiful. And of course, Bria Burton was on the program on Tuesday, and we started with her talking about the new anthology, The Light Fantastic. And as I mentioned to her, I was so happy to finally get a book that made me laugh. Because I've been getting too many pandemic-y books. Really, some are horrific and scary. And also even the police detective books, they're all wearing masks. I said, stop it. I can't do it. I can't deal with it.
Yes.
And then I get this book, and I laughed. Some of them stories are so funny that my jaw hurt. I laughed so hard.
That's good.
That was fantastic. And your story, now, you know, it's funny.
I have two of them.
Yeah, I know. I was going to say, you have two of them. But the one that I started with, you know, I don't know. I got such a kick out of it. The Andromeda Calling.
Andromeda Calling.
Okay. Oh, wow.
Okay.
This is so funny. Well, when an author can write in the way that you did. I gave this story a subtitle, Sweaty Palms, Sweaty Palms, because I got so nervous. I don't want to give it away, but it is brilliant.
Yeah.
Charles has taken a very simple idea. I mean, it's really, I don't even want to tell people what it is, but he has turned this, I don't want to tell it. People have to read this story.
Well, let me tell them what they should know.
Okay.
First of all, it's, as you know, Patsy, I'm a retrofuturist in some of my writing. I do steampunk and dieselpunk, and this is kind of retrofuturistic. It's what they would call either atom punk or space punk, and it goes back to 1962. We're talking about Andromeda Calling and the little boy and Wooly, right?
Yes.
So in 1962, it's set during the Cuban Missile Crisis. And during the Cuban Missile Crisis, there was a famous speech by John F. Kennedy that basically set the ultimatum to the Soviet Union about removing missiles. And that is a part of the story, because I excerpt that verbatim from the speech in places that are appropriate, because it's about two 10-year-old boys and a school bully. And the 10-year-old hero of the story is Peter Piggott, and he's incessantly bullied at school, and he wants to get rid of the bully. Well, it turns out that since we had this policy called mutually assured destruction, aliens had obviously decided to take a look at what we were doing and thought we were absolutely crazy. So during the Cuban Missile Crisis, I set the scene in Los Angeles, and there are UFO sightings. So there's this 10-year-old kid who's being bullied at school. There's UFO sightings in the newspapers every day, and there's this strange person on the television that he knows is the president, but not really understanding what it's all about. And he's talking about, you know, this Cuban Missile Crisis. So the whole thing was really about a plan that Peter Piggott, our hero, puts in place to get rid of the bully. And that's, I guess, as far as we need to go, isn't it?
Yes, we do. That's it. Because I want people to read this. As I'm reading this, really, my hands started to sweat. Like, I was holding my breath for a page and a half. This is a miracle of writing, that you can take a few ordinary words. I mean, they're ordinary words when separated, you know, just simple words. But you put them in the right order, and it creates a feeling in a person that you never forget. I will never forget this. And because I'm not even going to mention why, but a particular object that is described in this, I will never, ever look at that object again without thinking of this story.
Good.
And that is something, when an author can create that kind of memory, you know, that cell, you know, we have all these gray cells in there somewhere, and somewhere there is in my gray cell this memory now that forever, when I see this object that you used, I got a kick out of it after I recovered.
Yeah.
But it is brilliant writing.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. And it's called Andromeda Calling, and I'd love to see people give me some reviews about it and see what they think about all of the stories in Life Fantastic. I think that this is interesting, Patsy, because as you know from your interviews with Bria Burton, who's one of our other collectives in our author cooperative, that we've always had a theme that has been central to the purpose of each story, and the authors write the stories independent of one another. And we have sort of an editorial board that makes sure that the theme that we have is followed. So there's certain rules about, you know, when we did our thing about the alien probe that came to Earth and reimagining things about art, there were certain things that we wanted. But this one was totally open to the authors. We just basically said, hey, you're science fiction authors, you're fantasy authors, maybe some do horror and thrillers and things like that, but it's speculative fiction, the what if. Just go to town on it, but make it funny. And I think this is a real, what I would call a kaleidoscope of the imagination. These stories that are there, there's 10 of them. They just range, the spectrum from the sublime to the ridiculous, you know, and every star date in between. And, you know, there's some that are like, they're wacky. There's some really wacky ones.
There are wacky ones.
Laser hamsters and the Reddies are coming. And there are others that are a little more subtle and satirical. But I think that they're all, it just shows the group of authors that write together for these anthologies, how creative they can be when given a task, and this task was to be funny.
Well, you guys, you achieved the goal. You achieved the goal, which is so important. As you know, we all know we've gone through, and we're still going through. It's really nice in a way to be, I don't know, isolated in Epworth. Sort of isolated up there. You are in the middle of
a very self-contained village. We've been very thankful. We've got the old-fashioned greengrocer and butcher and everybody. We don't have to go to a big supermarket and get exposed to crowds of people. You know?
That is nice. It's, you know, I don't think I was ever, I'd never made it to Epworth. There was, I think there used to be some kind of a show. We had planned to go one time to Epworth, and I don't know, we probably stopped at a pub on the way.
Oh, yes.
You know, I know England very well through all the pubs that we went. My husband and I traveled all over England. We had a white Cadillac.
Oh, wow. That would have stuck
out. It did. It was wonderful. We'd drive up to, you know, a pub, and particularly, you know, we used to like to go around to all the old, you know, the castles, the manor houses, flower shows. We went to all of these. And we'd pull up to a pub and we'd have our white Cadillac. And, you know, people would think, oh, some movie star's coming from America. And it was wonderful. So we always got, you know, great reception from people. And
well,
I think
a lot of free drinks, too.
Oh, yeah, we did, actually. We did. And people would want their photo. As a matter of fact, one time we were in a village, and they were having a wedding, and they asked if my husband would let them come and, you know, like go into the car and come out of it like it was their car, you know.
Oh,
and,
I see.
And,
that's right.
And well, my husband was game for anything, and he acted as a chauffeur, and this couple got into the car and came out of the car. What? So they have these wonderful photos. So yeah, it's good that you're up there in Epworth.
Yes, we arrived just in time, almost just in time to be locked down. We came in 2019 in the summer, and by the early part of 2020, the lockdown was quite severe. So we did get around, but it's been, you know, we've not really gone outside. Well, we haven't gone outside the country, that's for sure. But, you know, it's like everywhere, you know, we're all sort of waiting for this to end. But, yeah.
Well, it's good that, but I am happy that you're safe up there. You know, I was really
the other story.
Huh?
What did you think of the other story?
First I was going to ask also. You know, it was funny. Bria Burton ended hers her story. What do you call? My mind went. I was thinking of Epworth. Binary.
Backlash.
So your story, the second story, of
Sod's
course.
Law.
Yeah, this is something. Again, Sod's Law. And tell us about this, because this is fascinating what you did with this story. And explain, it starts with the UN Treaty on the Ownership of Artifacts in Space, and which is something that people are starting now to think about, who's owning what up there.
That's right. In fact, it's interesting. Just, I think, in the past week or so, the Russians sent a killer missile to actually kill one of their satellites. And, of course, that created all this debris in space that had a dangerous impact on the International Space Station. That was a real thing that happened. So there's a lot of this crap that's floating around in space, space junk. And So I had a number of different titles for this story. This is not the first title for it. And if people know Britain, they would know that Sod's Law is the British equivalent of Murphy's Law. But I'd actually created the acronym Sod before without thinking of that connection, because Sod in my story stands for salvageable orbital debris. So our hero in this case is a pilot, a bit of a rogue, Mac Lancaster, who's purchased an off-lease construction space shuttle, and this is in the sort of, I'd say probably not quite far future, but maybe 50, 100 years from now. And he's using this space, this little shuttle of his, to collect bits and pieces out of orbit and sell them at a souvenir shop in a hotel that's at the end of a space elevator. So the space elevator stretches thousands of kilometers from the Earth to the end space station, where there's a hotel and a research center and a souvenir shop. So wealthy people can go up this space elevator and spend their holiday on this space station, and they sell all this space junk in the souvenir shop. So it opens up with him trying to sell a box of junk that he's collected, and the market's really poor. And his counterpart in the story, Connor Driscoll, who owns the souvenir shop, is reluctant to buy anything. So they do a deal, and you know, that's sort of what you call breaks the ice. And Mac, our hero, says, you know, I've got two other pieces of absolute vintage space exploriana that collectors would pay their eye teeth for, but they're too big to bring into the souvenir shop. They're strapped to the side of my space shuttle, so why don't you come out and have a look? So they go on an EVA, an extravehicular activity, and they go examine it. The first one's fairly somewhat innocuous, but I won't spoil the story of the first one, but it was something that he'd be interested in buying. But the second one is the meat of the story, and it's the wreckage of a module from a spaceship that had been lost, and nobody'd known what had happened to the crew and the spaceship, and he's got a piece of it, and it's attached to his space shuttle. So they're all excited. Connor Driscoll says, this is worth billions of dollars. We're all going to be rich. You know, where did you get this from, etc.? Well, the problem is, and I quote Neil deGrasse Tyson at the beginning of the story, that the universe is under no obligation to make sense to us. And this is where the story takes its twist. And I won't spoil too much of it, but the bottom line is there's something really strange about this object that he finds, this module of destroyed wreckage of spaceship. And from that point on, I took the inspiration from the movie Gravity with Sandra Bullock and George Clooney.
Mm-hmm.
And that initial sequence of special effects where the space station gets blown apart by orbiting debris. And so from that point, it goes into the realms of the bizarre. And I maybe shouldn't say anything more than that.
Well, perhaps not, but people should read it because it is fascinating. It's funny what happened with this Russian thing the other week. And I also thought of, you know, of this story because it is interesting what's first of all, I didn't know that they would be allowed to do that. You know, just sort of blow things up and I don't know if they even told people they were going to blow things up.
No, they didn't.
No, they just
told them after the fact when the debris was heading towards the International Space Station that to take evasive maneuvers.
I mean, that was really crazy.
Yes.
So
we've got the two things going on here, haven't we? We've got the militarization of space, and we've also got space tourism. You know, the idea that you can jump aboard Jeff Bezos' rocket or Richard Branson's rocket and go up into space if you've got enough money. So if the two of them combined kind of points you into, you know, science fiction often becomes science fact, doesn't it? And here we are, you know, with my story. I'd written it probably more than a year ago, you know, before Jeff Bezos' initial flights. But now were thinking, well, what if 100 years from now you could go up an elevator into space, you know, and what if there was so much junk around that the whole thing was like a, it's like the oceans, they're full of, it's full of stuff floating around in massive quantities. Well, what happens if that occurs in space? You know, the laws of the universe are not necessarily going to be understood or kind.
Now, would you, if Richard Branson offered you a spot, would you take that spot and go into outer space?
I think I would, if it was free.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, free.
I don't know that I could afford it. But, I mean, yes, you know, I mean, this is the thing, isn't it? When we grew up, during the early part of the space race, I mean, it was amazing. I mean, the first thing with blood in it that went up in space was a dog and a monkey. And then all of a sudden people, and it was like, oh, this is just the most dangerous thing in the world. But, you know, I'm actually writing, I finished writing the first draft of a novel based on another short story from the Alvarium experiment. You may know Return to Earth. Do you remember the anthology Return to Earth?
Yes, uh-huh.
There's a story in there called Children of the Stars that I wrote, and it had to do about this medical researcher who discovers this these women who have incredible fertility, and they can give birth like three times a year and all this kind of thing. Well, part of that is about, you know, so I expanded on that. I took that idea and turned it into a novel, and it's going to have two more novels. Before I publish the first one, I'll do three, so there'll be three, and it'll have an overarching trilogy plot as well as an individual book plot. But the whole idea behind that is the colonization of space and what we have to do as a human race in hundreds of years' time to really prepare ourselves for that. So when you start to think about ordinary people going into space, there's a lot of current controversy about, is that productive use of our resources, our money, you know, with so much poverty and strife going on, should someone spend $250,000, $1 million on a 20-minute flight in a rocket?
Well,
and I don't know what the answer to that is, but all I know is that at some point in time, you know, we will have to start to potentially colonize space in some way.
Well, meanwhile, we can get ready for it by reading The Light Fantastic. It's a wonderful, wonderful collection of stories. Some of them just are so funny, and all of them will make you laugh and smile and think, which is also sort of important. Think about something else. You know, there's, of course, Ken Pelham, Bria Burton was here, Veronica Hart, Dako Ufund, how do you pronounce his name?
Afanord.
Afanord.
It's a she.
Oh, she, Dako.
It's a she. Yes.
She hasn't been on yet. John Hope, of course, has been on. Kristen Durfee, Parker Francis, and of course, Scott Michael Powers will say too, and Charles A. Cornell. And you have a website, which is called, I think, Charles A. Cornell.
.com.
And people can go there and find out more. And you also, do you want to mention the Alvarium website? Is that still active?
The Alvarium, the best place to go is in Facebook, and go to the Alvarium experiment, and you'll get all the links.
And find more there. But go to Charles A. Cornell website, and everything's listed there. And of course, you know, it's just wonderful to talk to you. Thank you so much for calling all the way. And I do remember now the name of the pub that I went to. We went to, it's called Old Checkers.
Okay.
And do you know where that is? Somewhere in Lincolnshire. In Croft, I think. In Croft. I think it's in a village called Croft. I can't remember the details.
Look it up.
It's an old place.
Sure.
And it's been there, I think, a long time, which is wonderful when you get to England and you see things that are there for 400, like my cottage, 400 years. Anyway, it's been a joy to talk to you. Thank you so much for calling in.
Thank you.
And this is a wonderful book, The Light Fantastic. it's right away made me think of dancing, and and people, it will put a smile on your face. Get it wherever books are sold online, and perhaps in a bookstore. I don't know if any are open. But again, thank you so much, Charles, for being on Joy on Paper.
Very, very, very welcome. Thank you, Pastor.
Okay. Bye-bye now. Bye.
Bye.
Have a beer for me. Bye.
Bye.
Okay. You can head to the pub now. Okay, this is fantastic. What a day. What a day. I love talking to people in England. I really do. It's just brings back so many fond memories of England. Oh, and I forgot to mention, he's a 2018 silver medal winner for Dragonfly, a Reader's Favorite Book Awards for young adults. And he's just a fantastic writer, fantastic person. And I'm so happy that he was on Joy on Paper today. One of the things I want to tell you, remember, just go to my website, because if you go to my website, you will see that Bria Burton's first book buzz, sci-fi book buzz, really wonderful, wonderful, futuristic look at a wonderful sci-fi book, and she's going to be with us once a month, all year. It's amazing. And Devon Miller, thank you again. This new book buzz is just great, and I'm looking forward to another 11. Wow, can you believe it's 2022? The year has, I don't know, 2021 sort of disappeared in a fog, and perhaps that's the best thing that could happen to it, and we are done with it. And well, we'll hope that 2022 is going to turn around and be more cheerful. And I just want to say again, when you are a writer, if you are a writer, get Light Fantastic and read this first story in the book, the one about that is called Andromeda Calling by Charles Cornell. Read it. It's amazing. It is really amazing. I loved it. Because writers can do such wonderful things. They take really, you know, words that you hear every day, words that you use every day, and then they turn it into something wonderful. And like Carol J. Perry did in her new book, book 12, in her Witch City Mysteries, Till Death, which finally we get a wedding after 12 books. Her main character, Lee Barrett, gets married. My sister, the connoisseur of cozy mysteries, recommends it highly because she said, go ahead, people. We got it early. Pre-order it. It's not coming out till April, but it's a wonderful thing to do. Pre-order Carol J. Perry's Till Death because it's an exciting book. And I have finally, my sister finished it, and I have it today. So I'm starting today. So this is really exciting. Oh, I love to get books. Do you know how many books I get a day? I get a lot of books every day. Everybody, remember what I always tell you. One of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them spoken in an audible book. Or if you're very, very lucky, to hear those magic words, lights, camera, action, and your book will be turned into a major motion picture, streaming video, or perhaps a series on the Hallmark Channel, like I am hoping for Carol J. Perry. Both for Witch City Mystery series and also her Haunted Haven. I would love them to do that. Maybe they'd shoot it right here in our backyard where the series takes place. I love it. And because just down the road is the golf course where Babe Ruth used to play. My goodness, what a wonderful series that would be. Say something nice to somebody today, and I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. Thank you so much, Big Ed, for everything. I appreciate it, and Happy New Year to you. Happy New Year to everybody, and have a great weekend. Bye-bye now.
WTAN, Clearwater.
FM 106.1.
WDCF, Dade City.
FM 102.3.
WZHR, Zephyr Hills.
FM 104.3.
Listen.
The Only in America Minute with Bill Cochran will be heard at 1 p.m. today. Now, here's Canada Calling with Pryor Smith.
It's time for the Thursday edition of Canada Calling, the news from home for vacationing Canadians. Pryor Smith speaking from Toronto. Good to have you with us. On the weather front, Boy, it's been a tough start to the new year in many regions of the country, with much of the western half of the nation under an extreme cold alert and storm watches. Who would think that Nanaimo on Vancouver Island would be up to here in snow this week? But it is. There was another winter storm watch up yesterday for parts of the island, the Sunshine Coast and Vancouver, with a mix of snow and freezing rain. Avalanche warnings have been posted in the Rockies. Alberta is again under an extreme cold alert, along with Saskatchewan and Manitoba. Northwestern Ontario is shivering. Southern Ontario last evening and overnight was coping with howling winds. Freezing rain was the order of the day yesterday in New Brunswick. That mess is working its way east today across Newfoundland. So, where do we start with the daily COVID update? I guess here in Ontario, where all the lockdown measures announced by the Ford government on Monday are now in effect. For all intents and purposes, we're right back to where we were last year at this time. No indoor dining for the next 3 weeks. Kids are back to schooling online for at least the next 2 weeks. All ticketed events have been canceled. Bars and gyms are shut down. The Omicron infection has swept across the country. It's resulted in thousands of people booking off sick. The city of Toronto, for example, the third biggest city in North America, is expecting up to 60% of its workforce to be off the job over the next couple of weeks. The prime concern right now is staff shortages at hospitals across the country. Doctors, nurses, support staff booking off with COVID. We've heard reports of many hospitals being forced to have nurses working double shifts to ensure that shifts are covered. Airline flights are being canceled on short notice, given staff shortages. Same story with the GO commuter trains and buses here in southern Ontario. And in one form or another, all of this is impacting the supply chain. And now this message. I mentioned earlier this week the folks at your neighborhood Publix are extending a warm welcome back to Florida as the winter tourist season unfolds. If, like so many other Canadians, you stayed at home over the holidays and then headed south, job one this week is obviously stocking up the kitchen cupboard for your winter stay. That's where Publix enters the picture. Over many years, decades in fact, two things have never changed at Publix. The Publix's commitment to high-quality food and household products at low prices, and customer service that's in a class by itself. And when it comes to food products, there's a Publix guarantee. If it's not the freshest, Publix won't sell it. Veteran Florida travelers will be the first to tell you to do the weekly shopping at Publix. When you do, you'll know why we say Publix, where shopping is a pleasure. Prime Minister Trudeau, who got his booster shot on Tuesday, held his first news conference of the year yesterday. He thanked those who have received their shots, and he went on to urge those who have held off to this point to get vaccinated, saying they'd be doing the right thing. He said 120 million rapid tests have been distributed to the provinces so far. 140 million more are on the way this month. Some 7 million booster shots have already been done. The government, by the way, continues to urge Canadians to avoid non-essential travel. Continuing a 67-year broadcast tradition, this is Canada Calling.
Hey, you new to the area or just want to know about the best hidden gems and upcoming events? Stay tuned. Be Local Buzz with Devin takes you to these places, introduces you to the best businesses, and tells you about upcoming buzz. Preset your radio to Tan Talk 1340 AM or 106.1 FM every Thursday from 4 to 5. That is the Be Local Buzz with Devin on Tan Talk 1340 AM and 106 FM every Thursday from 4 to 5. Looking forward to speaking with you.
And now Canada Calling continues. It's probably fair to say that everybody in Canada knows of someone who's refused to get vaccinated. It's caused tension within families and between friends for more than a year. The Prime Minister weighed in on it during his news conference, saying Canadians are, and I quote, angry with those who have still not rolled up their sleeves. He added, again I quote, people are seeing cancer treatments and elective surgeries put off because beds are filled with people who chose not to get vaccinated, and they're frustrated. By way of comment, he's right. At the Toronto Stock Exchange yesterday, the index down 196 at 21039. The buck this morning, 78.38 US. Under the heading of, if you're going to do something stupid, you better remember that just about everybody these days is walking around with a camera, and your craziness will probably come back to bite you. Canada's Transport Minister has asked Transport Canada to investigate reports of unacceptable behavior on a chartered Sunwing flight over the holidays between Montreal and Cancun. Video posted to social media shows partying, maskless, drinking, dancing in the aisles and on the seats. Asked about this fiasco, the Prime Minister referred to it as a slap in the face, putting airline workers at risk. Sunwing and other Canadian airlines are denying the party types flights home, and when they do get home, they're going to face fines starting upwards of $5,000, not to mention possible jail time. And finally, I mentioned yesterday the end of the line for classic BlackBerry smartphones. You know, at one time, Waterloo, Ontario-based BlackBerry was a titan in the tech world. Today, it's hanging on in the software and consulting business. Given this latest Canadian business dead end, one commenter on the CBC's website wrote, and I quote, McLaughlin, Avro, Bricklin, Electrohome, Eaton's, GSW, Dominion, Nortel, and now BlackBerry smartphones. Only in Canada, eh? This is Canada Calling and online at CanadaCalling.com. Back tomorrow, Pryor Smith speaking from Toronto.
Did you ever think about